Talking Records podcast.
Yeah.
We spend way too much time talking about... Yeah.
A deep cut from the end of the album, and they're talking about positive mental attitude all the way through. Who said hit it four eyes?
Talking Records podcast. Talking Records podcast. Talking Records podcast. We talk about our favorite records. Talking Records podcast. We're so glad you tuned in. Thank you all for listening. You showed up to the right place. Jed and his friends dive deep and analyze the records we have grown to love. We'll tell you how we found the band, then give you a track by track breakdown of all the songs. So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a seat. Today we'll look at another record in its entirety.
Welcome back to another episode of Talking Records. My name is Jed, and you're listening to a podcast devoted to digging deep into great albums we've been listening to for years and years and years and years and years. I'm just a huge fan of music and love to know the stories behind my favorite albums. Today I'm joined by my longtime friend and co-conspirator, Mr. Chris Taft. How's it going, Tafty?
It's going wonderful. Thanks for having me again, Dion.
I'm psyched to have you back on the podcast. We had a lot of fun last time.
Absolutely.
And the time before that.
And the time before that, I know, a couple of times appearance. Now. Yeah.
Very nice. It looks like you're in like a, what do you got there? It's like your studio. You got amps in the back. I see guitar pedals.
Yeah, a couple of amps. That is a reptile in an astronaut outfit. This was like Command Central for a year and a half of teaching.
Oh, yes.
But then it's been, you know, it's kind of slowly like life outside of this one room has kind of crept back in again. So, yeah, it's you don't even want to see everything else around it. I'm keeping my hands off the desk because I don't know what I'm going to catch by being near it. Yeah.
He's in a white room, folks. The walls are white.
Padding on them, you know. A very secure environment.
I bet you felt like you wanted to jump into a padded room after teaching on Zoom all day.
That's eventually what I looked for. It was like institution white, you know, just painted on the walls. Yeah. You know, it was a very specific color. Felt appropriate for the environment here.
Very nice. Well, I am so glad that you are back, and we are going to dig into another great Pennywise album.
Yes.
All right. So are you ready to get started on digging into Unknown Road?
I am ready.
All right. You got yourself enough beer there?
Somewhere, like I said, it's hidden. Yep. Probably some down here from a few months ago. Yeah.
All right. All right, let's jump in.
Excellent.
Pennywise's Unknown Road was released on August 17th, 1993 through Epitaph Records. Unknown Road was recorded at West Beach Recorders in Hollywood, California, with engineer Donald Cameron and producer Joe Persilio. Cameron owned the studio, and this is actually where the band recorded their first album, their debut album in 1991. So back to the same studio, Mr. Brett, owner of the label, had produced the first album and taken his name off. He is nowhere to be found on this record. So so this album, Tafty, has a really interesting like lead up to the album. Okay. Work began on Unknown Road in 1992 with bassist Jason Thirsk switching to vocals. And his bass teacher, Randy Bradbury, who is actually the band's current bassist, joining in as a session player on bass. So the reason why Jason had switched to vocals is because Jim had quit the band.
This is like a whole behind the music, no idea. This is wild. So one album in, Jim Lindbergh quits the band. Randy Bradbury is teaching Jason Thirsk how to play bass.
Yeah.
Jason's doing vocals.
Yeah, there's actually live footage. You can go on YouTube and find live footage of Jason as vocalist for Pennywise. It's a trip, man. Check it out.
I've heard this album countless times. Mine's already blown by that.
So Jim Lindbergh quits the band. So get this. Don't worry, he would come back.
Thank God. Yeah.
According to grunge.com, Pennywise's aggressive music attracted a lot of racist and violent fans after the release of their first studio album in 1991, which caused major issues for Jim Lindbergh. According to an LA Times article written in 1995 by Mike Bohm, Jim said, "The whole violence scene around this style of music got too much for me. We played a horrendous show in Hollywood, and the place got thrashed. It just turned into a big fight with one or two guys yelling, 'White power!'"
Wow.
In the article, Jim explains, "We had a logo with a P and a W, and they said that stands for white power.
Oh, man.
We made it very obvious in our shows that people should take pride in who they are, not because of their skin color. Hate is so diametrically opposed to everything we stand for, but that kind of thing is going to happen." As the violence increased, Jim asked himself, "What am I doing here? I have such an aversion for this type of behavior, violence, and hate-mongering, and I'm stuck in the middle of it as if I'm the spokesperson for it?" But that wasn't all. Jim was also feeling frustrated with the band's seriousness around practicing and sounding the best they could. In the Times article, Jim said, "I was wanting everything to sound perfect, and practices would end up as big beer fests. 20 to 30 people would show up bringing cases of beer, and we could never get anything done. I knew we had the potential to be a great punk band, and it angered me when I wasn't getting the same dedication from the other members." So,
wow.
Can you imagine?
I don't know what to say to all that.
I know. You're trying to like, "Hey, guys, I got some songs," and everybody's just getting trashed.
Just getting slammed. And that's crazy. So it was in L.A., that first show. Well, not first show, but during that time. They played in L.A. I never would have connected that with like the PW, the Pennywise logo. And
I know. Isn't that crazy? Like what people will bend to, you know,
ownership
to justify
over that
their awful behavior.
Ago. Yeah, that's insane. Man, so he left after that. He says, "Peace, I'm done. No more beer fests."
Yeah, you know, takes
Pennywise
off.
Pennywise instead of white power. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the rest of the band keeps up. Jason Thirsk is on vocals. Bradbury's in playing bass. So
we got this. Before Jason took over on vocals, they actually did a tour with Dave Quackenbush from the Vandals.
Wow. No kidding.
So
that's
if you can imagine Pennywise with the guy from the Vandals. And what happened was, is they were in Europe and they were really seeing that their popularity was growing. Like people were turning up for the shows and they're like, "Wow," you know, it was kind of sobering to be, you know, to turn a phrase. It was sobering because they realized that, hey, we're making it. We're gaining popularity. Maybe we should take this a little bit more seriously.
Yeah.
And as the band began writing and preparing for LP2, Jim noticed and came back. Return to the band.
Now he is welcomed back with open arms. Do we know anything about that? I mean, the album was made, so.
I'm sure they were psyched to have him back. I'm sure they looked at those crowds that were forming in those European shows and they're like, "We got to get our guy back.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to get serious because this, you know, this is picking up." So Jim comes back, but Jason leaves the band.
Oh, no way. Enter
so
Andy Bradbury.
Jason, okay. As you know, struggled with a lot of, you know, addiction. And
yeah.
So he actually left the band right before they were going to get started on the recording to take care of some personal matters. So Randy comes back on bass again. And, you know, it begs me to wonder if some of the guys in this band thought maybe this album was never going to get made.
Seriously. And this is 2 years. They're working on this 2 years after the self-titled, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. Byron is just there like, "What's going on?
Yeah, are we doing this or what, guys?"
Yeah.
Fletcher, you know, he's probably like, "Come on, you guys."
Fletcher just wants to go back to the beers at practice. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's interesting to note, though, that Jason does actually appear on two of the tracks. So we'll highlight those when we get them. And, you know, after that, there's really not a whole lot of information on the recording. I imagine the album was recorded rather quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, get the drums down, you know, maybe keep some of the bass scratch, guitars go down, vocals. And then I'm sure it was, you know, get back on the road.
Yeah.
And, you know, the behind the scenes will do the rest. And it's actually funny because we'll talk when we talk about the art that maybe they should have stuck around and paid a little bit more attention because first presses have a couple of mistakes on them, which we'll talk about when we get to the art. So Taft, before we dive into the tracks and stuff, I know that you were on the podcast a while back, episode 26. We talked about Full Circle. That was a blast.
Yeah.
So you told me how you got into the band. You told me how you got into Full Circle. But tell me how you got to this record. So how did you find Unknown Road?
This one, wow. So this was, again, Full Circle, kind of late coming to that. We had talked about Warped Tour 1997, driving around.
Yeah.
Town blaring that album, everything like that. So, you know, I think that my route ended up kind of working its way backward from Full Circle, About Time, you know, kind of going back and then eventually getting to Unknown Road. So it wasn't probably until you and I were in college, like freshman year or so, you know, 99 or so, that I actually ended up hearing the album for the first time. And it was a Pennywise album. I loved it, you know, just a half an hour of fury. But again, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't until about 2 years after we were really listening to them that that I kind of stumbled across it. And it was, believe it or not, somebody else who's really cool in another dorm who happened to have it, because I didn't have a copy of it at the time myself.
Yeah.
So, and I acquired a copy of it somehow and listened to it nonstop. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, well, very similar to you, you know, just like you, I'd heard Perfect People from About Time on the Punk-O-Rama 2, got into the band, picked up Full Circle, which, you know, we listened to so much.
Yeah.
So naturally, you know, I wanted to hear what else the band had. So I worked backwards and started snatching up their albums. I first heard Unknown Road at a friend's house. They had it on cassette tape and it was playing, and I said something dumb like, "Hey, this sounds like Pennywise."
Yeah.
And of course, the response was, "It is Pennywise."
That's Pennywise.
You know? But one of the first things I noticed, Taft, about this record was the intro.
Yeah.
Was the piano piece that was played at the end of Full Circle. So
exactly.
Naturally, you know, getting Full Circle first, I just thought that was some, you know, thing at the end of the album that it was like, you know, the whole album was dedicated to Jason and the piano piece was just kind of a nice thing to end the record. You know,
right.
It went on for a long time. But then when I heard Unknown Road, I was surprised to hear that. I was like, oh, this is actually something, you know, meaningful. This is a piano piece that has some connection to the band that they then brought back. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Right out of the gate, too. Right before any chords or anything. Just opening up the album.
Yeah. It's kind of like that echoey effect on
it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought that was really cool. And, you know, the album just picks up from there and just charges through. I was listening to a great collection of fast and intense Pennywise songs. You know, for me, one of the many highlights of this band has always been the intensity in which they deliver their message.
That,
you know, in your face, Jim is like leaning into the crowd,
just
delivering that powerful message, encouraging us to be thoughtful and to closely consider our surroundings, which I always liked. You know, I don't like to be reprimanded or told what to think. I like to be challenged to consider, you know, think about things. And I like that. I like that positive message, that encouragement to think for yourself.
Totally.
All right, Taft. So are you ready to jump into these songs?
I am ready. And man, once we jump, it is just a half an hour of speed.
Yeah. The album kicks off with Unknown Road. So as we mentioned before, the album starts with this piano piece. It was actually taken from the 1992 movie Poison Ivy.
That's right. Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
I was like trying to figure out the significance of this movie. Like,
did you find anything? Is there any?
No, I mean, it came out the same year.
The same year, 92 when the
album came out. Maybe they were just like watching this movie one night late, you know, that they were recording and they... Oh, that's kind of a cool piece, you know? Let's start the album with that.
I'm kind of embarrassed to even say this. Was that Alyssa Milano? Do you remember Poison Ivy?
I think it is.
We could go to the Google sphere, I'm sure, to see that. But like, watching Poison Ivy, let's put this piano piece in.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm with you. I totally thought, part of the Bro Hymn tribute, I'm like, wow, they have that extended version of it. And then hearing it on Unknown Road,
It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So on this record, the Robert Frost poem, The Road Not Taken, is credited as inspiration. So naturally, I had to go dig up that, you know, poem and give it a read and see if I could figure out any kind of connections. I mean, it's similar in tone and feel, but you know, they didn't like steal any lines from it or anything.
Yeah, talking about the woods being dark and deep or something like that. Yeah.
My takeaway from this great opener, I love this song. It's one of my favorite tracks on the whole album. I just really love it. You know, they talk about, you know, the unknown road, or the known road for that matter, serves as your comfort zone.
Sure.
So many feel that life takes on a richer meaning if you take your chances on the unknown road. You know, you challenge yourself a bit.
Yeah.
You don't always go where it's safe. I always tell my students, like, if you're not like working hard, or if it's not hard, then it's really not worth it.
Yeah, you're not growing, just doing the familiar. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally true. It's like the, it's like right off the bat, just starting with like the what if song, you know?
Yeah.
Like just talking about comfort and following that path like you were talking about. And, you know, I've got my other monitor over here with like some lyrics on it. Ever thought you were mistaken? Ever think about the stones you've left unturned?
Yeah.
You know, just, that overarching theme that they always have about, you know, about not having regrets and.
Yeah. Not, like fearing what is unknown, you know, take advantage of new or different opportunities, which, you know, that's just a great way to think, you know, it's like the old saying, you'll never know unless you try, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Jim sings, what passages, what fantasies lie just beyond the unknown road. Do you know the miracles that could be found? They're waiting down the unknown road. And so that's kind of a great passage from the song.
Yeah. And what a hard hitting, just like blazing opening too. Just like pick sliding into just a wild opener.
It definitely gets you psyched, man. It definitely causes like the hair on your arms to like stand up and like good record to have in the car, you know?
Yep. And like right away with like that sing-songy anthemic, you know, choruses that they have all the way through the album, you know, right there in the first song too.
Yeah. Solid opener. Yeah. I like it. Great song. Yeah. Gets me thinking, you know, that's what I like. You know, my imagination starts to run a little wild thinking about, you know, how things could have been different. You know, what if I had done this? What if I had done that? You know,
yeah,
if
this decision, that decision, right? Butterfly effect with it all. And yeah,
I'd gone down that unknown road. So it's cool. Yeah. It's a great way to start off the record, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, the next song is Homesick.
Oh, man.
This is another great song. You know, two strong tracks right off the bat.
Yeah.
Jim sings, it's like a dark cloud swallowed up humanity. Whatever it is beyond me. Homesickness is the flu that surrounds me. A virus spreading through the street. It astounds me. Homesickness. I just love that.
That is the exact same quote that I pulled out of this and I'm looking at right now. I love that. Yeah. I love that. I always associate this song. I feel like it's just like a live performance classic. Like,
oh yeah,
they, you know, anytime I've seen they come in with that, those first chords, whatever note it happens to be, and you automatically know what song it is, and then it just gets ripping.
Yeah.
And Jim, you know, he's just stalking all around stage, and like you said, he's leaning in, faces over everybody, and
yeah
so just great. Phenomenal though. But that line though that you quoted, I love that. Homesickness is the flu that's be a virus spread into the street. Yeah. And it's full of it too. I mean, it's got so many good, you know, so many good little, just talking about the graffiti on the wall and not recognizing the place that was so familiar to you and that you love and that you consider to be home, and seeing things that look so grandiose. And now they're like, wow, they just look kind of diminished and tiny.
He wonders why, you know, he should feel anything for a city that is, you know, abandoned and ravaged, where you can't walk down the street. You know, he feels unable to account for why such a beautiful place. Yeah, like you said, has turned out to be like so run down and terrible. Like, you know, you know, returning to a place can often shake that rose-colored view you held of it.
Totally.
Like you always think fondly back, like, oh, that was so great. That place was so great, you know. Yeah. Then you go back there and everything looks like a little smaller and everything looks a little dirtier. And you're like,
houses that are abandoned and
So
and for such you know, kind of a reflective song, it's just again, it's such a mover. It's just just a jamming song for what, a minute and a half or so. And again, anytime live, I absolutely love when they get into that. He is so animated during that song.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's just, you know, a fun song to listen to. It's a fun song to like sort of really kind of think back on, are you actually homesick for a place, or are you homesick for what the place used to mean to you, or the things that you did there? You
Absolutely. Know? That idea, that connection that you have in your head with it. And yeah.
Like college.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah.
Anyway, there's a video for the song, and it sort of weaves this grainy live footage with a black and white video of just this kid like wandering around a city, you know, shaving his head, joining a gang.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah. That's right. Oh man, I should have done more homework again. I completely forgot that was for Homesick.
It's got like title cards that draw our attention to statistics about handgun violence. You know, it's like, what you'd expect.
I don't remember any of that. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's terrible to say. Oh, I don't remember the thing that's like impactful about it. Wow.
Yeah.
I just remember the kid shaving his head and the greenie. Yeah. Well, I know my YouTube rabbit hole I'm going down after we're conversing here.
Checking out old Pennywise videos.
That's right.
Yeah, it's kind of a crazy video because at the end, I mean, or I don't know if it's the end, but like there's a scene where like the kid is involved in a shooting, and then at the end of the video, he turns the body over with his foot and it turns out to be him. Like I always remember that being like really like, whoa.
Yeah, I don't remember any of that. I have to go back and watch this.
Nice.
That's crazy. That was for Homesick though. Wow.
All right, so the third track on the album, Time to Burn.
Oh, that bass, man.
Yes, picking off of that great bass work from Randy.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
The rest of the band comes pounding in on that G minor chord. I just love it.
Yeah.
And so the first thing I noticed when I first heard this song, Taft, maybe you noticed this too, I don't know, it kind of runs throughout the whole album, but I feel like Jim had not found his voice yet. You know, his vocal delivery on a lot of this record is really different. I mean, you don't hear what he's doing here on About Time or Full Circle or anything after. You know, he has like this like minor key, kind of like holds notes, you know, like this alternative rock kind of like thing he's doing, which is all over this record. And it's funny because you don't hear it after Unknown Road.
It's the fact that you brought that up is wild. That's one of the main things that I wrote here. That in addition to the bass, you know, because I always get that stuck in my head. And I love it. I love having it stuck in my head. But that was the one thing that I kind of picked out in terms of the vocals. I'm like, it seems to be the lower edge of Jim's range, you know?
Yeah.
And I can't think of anywhere where I've really heard him sing much lower, like trying to drop down into like a lower register than that. Right. And like you said, just kind of like a lot of those long held low.
Yeah, they go notes, up the and phraseology down.
He's the song. Like, yeah, all extending words out, just individual words that are a lot longer. That was the big thing that I wrote there too, with the lyrics there. And, you know, I didn't really think of it chronologically, just in terms of it being early material for them, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
you think about a few years later with About Time, that many more practices without too much beer, you know, and, and just time to really develop that vocal style, not to mention just like performing out and having your voice cut, I'm not a singer, but having your voice cut out over all the other instruments with a big crowd. And, but that's so funny though. That's the biggest thing that I noticed there after the bass.
And it's not like it's bad.
No,
it's,
not at all.
It's
not
just very different. It's funny. Different. You know, I almost feel like he had someone in his ear being like, "Hey man, you gotta sing. You gotta sing, man. You gotta really explore the range of your voice." I don't know. Maybe someone in the studio was like egging him on to like, you're just shouting. You're just talking. Try singing.
Really hold but that now like, a lot longer. Now. Yeah. Don't let go yet. Don't let go yet. Keep it going.
Yeah. It's not bad. I just think that like what he's doing now just suits the music better.
Oh man, I know.
You know.
Yeah.
He's not up there trying to like sing the scales as he's delivering these lyrics.
Yeah, and you still get plenty of that on the album, you know, that staccato, that machine gun Jim Lindbergh, you know, delivery of all the positive message and everything like that. But yeah, that song just
And you know what I had to do? I had to go like YouTube current Pennywise playing Unknown Road songs to see, I'm such a nerd, to see if he does it, and he doesn't.
He sings. That's not nerd. That's damn good research right there. So he doesn't do that?
He doesn't hold him like that.
No kidding.
He clips him off. Oh, well, at least the shows I saw, who knows, but
yeah, sure. Yeah,
I think he's kind of folded his style into that. So
yeah. He's like, all right, I'm coming up for a breath now. Yeah. Get that bug out of the ear that's telling me to keep on singing in this particular pitch. Yeah. Now, the one thing that I couldn't find at all, do you have any idea what that long monologue quote is in the middle? That after 20 years of oppression.
I tried to figure that out. No,
no idea. No idea. I figured it was from a movie or something like that. You know?
Yeah,
I don't
it
know.
Sounds like some politician or something.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's like
yeah.
audio lifted from a speech. I tried to figure it out. Maybe somebody knows. If you do, talkingrecords@outlook, send us an email. We want
Please
to
let us know. That's just like this weird little bit of trivia that I could have sworn I'd look up and be like, oh, it was this person, but no, nothing.
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah, later on the album, it sounds like there's a news report. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's awesome with the bass and the drums and everything over it. And then the occasional guitar flicking in with Fletcher. Meow, meow.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Then back into that chorus. Yeah.
Yeah. Jim sings, "Time never bothered me till I saw it slipping slowly away from me." He presents time as something he's wary of taking for granted, which, again, just it's so important to be thinking about that, not taking time for granted, not, you know, losing sight of what's important and all those things. So
totally. Yeah.
Great song for that.
Major thematic element through the album and in a lot of their music. You know, it's one of the reasons I love them. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Track four. It's Up to Me.
All right, now this is this a Jason Thirsk bass song? Is this one of the two?
This
you know?
Is one of the songs that Jason plays bass on. Yeah,
it is. Okay, gotcha. This man, this might be musically. This might be one of my favorites on the album.
I love this song.
I really yeah. like this. Yeah,
this is one of my probably my top three.
Yeah, yeah.
Which changes all the time, but I tend to leave It's Up to Me in
yep.
there. I love this song.
Me too. Yeah.
Drawing inspiration from the works of Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, Jim sings, "I got to make a plan for myself. Can't look to you, can't look to anybody else. Only this way am I truly free. I wasted time too long now. It's up to me." A strong believer in the transcendentalist movement, Jim pointed out in an article in South Bay by Cat Monk, the punk rock ethos was described by people from centuries ago. It was the same self-reliance and civil disobedience and all these things I really related to. I put a lot of those ideas into my songwriting. Songs like It's Up to Me. So, I mean, I can clearly hear that.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I'm going to give Byron MVP on this song. His drumming throughout this whole album.
Hey, amen. It's all dry now. It's the drums.
I mean, the fills
so
after
album.
The choruses in this song are just amazing.
It's so good. Yeah. And I love the fact that it just comes right in. I mean, the drums, incredible. But then right away, like going into like this intro solo, you know, that's just surfing around. Just this gnarly, you know, over the top in the background solo happening before even any lyrics come in. And in the drums, yeah, the drums are just killer.
Yeah.
Love the
I
lyrics,
like that guitar part.
Yeah, and I did see, you know, some of the Emerson influences and everything. And one that stood out to me was "Ignore the options that I could not see. Indecision had a hold of me." Even goes back to like the Unknown Road lyrics, you know, that kind of thematic element of like, well, you know, stone unturned here, kind of paying attention to alternatives and what might be instead, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's rad to know that these guys are just digging poetry, you know?
Yeah,
like Jim is just
seriously.
Digging into some poetry and like... getting it in the punk rock lyrics and stuff. It's awesome.
Yep, exactly. Something that the people at that initial Pennywise concert would not have gotten.
Yeah, those boneheads, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's so cool. But yeah, to be able to dig that poetry and get that kind of meaning out of it and then deliver it in such a powerhouse manner.
Yeah.
You know, it's really something. Part of what I love about them.
Channeling a little Bad Religion, the backup vocals are singing It's Up to Me while Jim sings the I Gotta Get a Hold of My Life part, which I just think that's awesome.
That's cool. Really cool.
It's really cool that they were trying out some, you know, stuff vocally, some backing vocals and stuff. So the last thing I'll say about this song is the band would release Land of the Free, another amazing Pennywise album in 2001, with a song on it called It's Up to You.
That's right.
So, who's it really up to? Is it up to
Depends
you?
Depends on the year, I suppose. Almost 10 years later, right? Oh, land of the free. How much time do we have? Let's just do an all-nighter here. I'm gonna get some coffee going. We'll do every Pennywise album
Yes.
that we haven't done yet. Oh,
Spend the whole
that's
night talking about Pennywise.
yeah. It's up to you. Well, we have to get them on the phone, see if they can let us know who's it really up to.
All
Yeah.
right, track five, You Can Demand. A song about thinking for yourself and making up your own mind. So yes, the theme continues. I love it. You know, it's so important. I think, especially now. I mean, this stuff was important back in '93. Of course it
Yeah,
was, but
sure.
just like, independence, thinking for yourself, not just getting rolled up in this like mob mentality and going along with like the status quo. I just love these challenges to all that. You know, think for yourself. You know, it's okay. It's okay to have
Absolutely.
your own opinion about something or have a differing opinion about something.
Yeah. And some great lyrics in this too. Don't let them trick you with fancy words. As long as you're able to see through the lines, you'll be just fine.
I guess this
Just
was written by Fletcher.
was it really?
Yeah.
Awesome. So he can not only do that ridiculous palm muting, crazy fast picking in the
Yeah.
beginning, right? But he can also come up with awesome lyrics like that for a song.
Great lyrics, but you know
Yeah.
what? I feel like there was almost too many of them
Yeah.
because there are a few awkward moments where it almost sounds like Jim is trying to fit the lines in.
Oh,
And then as the chorus is ending, the second verse starts. It almost like overlaps. Yeah, I was
just
telling you about
overlapping.
this the other day. I
That's
like
right.
again, I had to like, go watch like videos. I'm like, is he able to like get the end of that and then get into the second verse? And he does amazingly.
Yeah,
He's got like
somehow.
such a
Yeah.
fast
Without
delivery.
asphyxiating himself, I
He must
know.
take like
Yeah.
one breath at the beginning of the song and just like
Crazy.
hold
Yeah. It's still doing it
it.
today. It's wild.
Yeah.
Man.
But yeah, there's so many words in the verse. And, it doesn't happen after the second chorus because they go into the bridge section. But that
Yep.
first chorus into the second, I'm always like listening for that. And I'm like, oh, he nails it again. Well, of
Yeah.
course he does. It's a recording.
This time, though, we're gonna
I'm like, he's
get
not going to get it. He's not going to get it this time. He always does.
it.
He makes it look so easy. That always impresses me about some of these vocalists, the way they can deliver all these words. Like this is like, reading these things, it's like a novel and they remember all the words and they can get them out fast enough. I trip over my own tongue when I'm singing, man. I'm
Oh,
like
trip over my own tongue talking. Yeah, gets it out so quick. And also just with the stage presence, again, the stalking around on stage, I mean, he's an animal. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible to be able to spit all that out so quickly and articulately and with meaningful, actual meaning behind the lyrics too. Yeah, super impressive.
All right, let's take a look at Nothing.
I saw cold at the end of the line, and so I started to pray.
Slowing things down just a bit
Yeah, the first slowdown
for,
of the album, almost halfway through, huh?
you know what? And I feel like they had to slow this one down because I feel like these lyrics are some of the strongest on the record. I
Yeah.
love this song.
Yeah, very strong, almost pleading, all the way throughout. A lot of range changes. It gets really high pitched with some of the areas where it's, kind of evoking desperation of some sort. But yeah, I agree. It seems really appropriate to be a little bit slower.
I mean, the verse just kind of chugs along,
Yeah.
as Jim looks for answers and questions the things he's been told. Then the second section, the chorus takes off at like full speed.
Full, yeah, exactly.
When the second verse comes around, the band dropped the pace down again, which I always thought was kind of cool.
Yep.
It's like this like roller coaster effect of like, slowly moving along and then taking off, and then slowly moving in and then taking off again. I just thought that
Yeah.
was cool.
Just back and forth with it. Yeah.
Bouncing between slower and faster parts.
Yeah.
And it's just a great way to build tension, in the
Oh,
song.
totally. Absolutely. And it's just an interesting chain of events in it too. Like admittedly, I hadn't really, I've listened to the song a million times. I've paid attention to the overarching sort of theme behind it, but not really looking too deep into the lyrics. Things just seem to accelerate with it. You know what I mean? Like it starts off, talking about taking the pain away. And I think the exact quote is like talking about sweets. I don't know if that's a definitive you know, if it's a metaphor for something heavier or what, you know. But then, you know, again, you get that fast chorus like you were talking about, then it backs back down. And we're talking about a life of crime. So like everything is getting a little bit more desperate and a little bit more pleading and speeds up again and then backs down again. Like just this frantic sort of feeling to it that's kind of discomforting, you know, like you can really get the sense that that a person's struggling, you know?
Yeah. At one point he sings, "Hate, it was so easy to do. You just directed all your anger at fear. And then you follow it through and it's like so dark. It gets you thinking about, you know, this like world of hate.
Follow it through. That's so chilling.
Yeah.
Like it just makes it sound so easy, which I guess unfortunately it is, you know, but,
unfortunately. Yeah.
Man. Yeah. Just really, really, really powerful.
It's dark. Yeah. I was trying to look at, I've got the lyric sheet here with the violin. Of course, the print on this thing is like,
it's got
to
be like 6-point font.
Microscopic. Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. I'm blind now.
With like typewriter font too, you know?
Yeah. All right. So closing off side A, we've got Vices. A song about the vices that work toward ruining your life. I don't think this was written about Jason, but boy, his struggles and then his tragic death, this song is hard to listen to.
Yeah,
and
this
not
one,
think
and there's
about
another
him.
One coming up as well. Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, musically, I love it. It's, you know, catchy. I mean, the syncopated sort of chorus lyrics that they have, musically, I find it could get stuck in my head. But yeah, that dark, and I mean, not foreshadowing, but I mean, just knowing what the history would be a few years later, you know?
Yeah.
It's really something.
It just seems like it was around, it was prevalent. I mean, addiction is a terribly challenging thing to overcome. And for many, that challenge is too difficult to overcome. I feel like in this song, Jim is extending the hand to help. He sings, "I keep on knocking, but there's nobody home. You're telling lies, living high. Now you're dying. If you want somebody's help, why don't you answer the door?"
Yeah, man. That's heavy. It sounds like very unfortunate experience, you know?
Yeah, it's possible that these guys knew, you know, any number of people that were struggling. And, it just feels like it's one of those songs where it's talking about the people watching someone struggle.
Yeah.
It can often be hard to, you know, find a way to be helpful and supportive. It may feel like they should have done more. You know, there's always that feeling like, oh, you know, how come I didn't see it? Or how come I didn't do more?
Yeah.
When a friend or a loved one succumbs to addiction. But, you know, it's hard. It's often hard to find, you know, a way to be helpful or, you know, not be alienating or not, you know, I don't know.
Just being available, being able to help. And
yeah, they're definitely saying that they'll offer support, but it's really up to the person to accept the help.
Yeah. And man, I mean, throughout this whole Any Pennywise album, it's just the lyrics, you know, take your medicine through your nose, fine today, but what about tomorrow?
Yeah.
Man, it's just so, I mean, it's delivered, not matter of factly, but just so, so quick and just so easy to miss. And then you read it, you see it on paper, you're like, wow, you know, you're always missing, you're always slow, used to be so deep, now you're shallow, you know, just watching somebody deteriorate due to a, you know, due to a drug addiction. It's terrible.
Yeah, and you make a really good point. These songs do go by so fast that, I mean, you have to read the lyrics. You have to, like, follow along because you'll never hear all this stuff if you're just listening.
Yeah, and despite how, I mean, we're, like, the bummer content, I mean, there's still, you know, you brought up the point that it's everything, a thematic element with them is that they're, like, positive mental attitude and talking about positivity and gaining control and, you know, just in this particular instance, trying to help somebody else who's having trouble doing that kind of
mindset.
That
hopeful,
you know,
element to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Be sure to follow Talking Records on social media. We can be found on Instagram or Talking Records Podcast. We can also be found on Twitter and YouTube. Give us a like or a follow, and we'll try to keep fresh content coming your way daily. You can also visit our website at talkingrecordspodcast.com. There you'll find episodes, merch, and more. You can even drop us an email at talkingrecords@outlook.com. These are all great ways for us to connect with you over all the great music we enjoy. We would love to get this podcast in front of more music lovers, and you can help us by providing us with a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you consume podcasts, as every review helps us reach more listeners. Also, word of mouth is helpful too. All right, thanks everyone.
All right, let's flip the record over, and side B begins with City is Burning.
Blinding light burning the sky. A mass of shadows dark usually hides. Animals out of their cage. Who will burn their environment without any shame? Lock doors and close your eyes. Sit back and you watch TV like
that. Jeez, this is like the ultimate quarantine song, huh? Ay-yi-yi.
Yeah. Oh. Out of sight, out of mind.
Ay-yi-yi, lock your doors, shut off your minds.
It isn't my problem. Yeah. Another song with the lyrics written by Fletcher.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, while you're safe inside, the city is burning tonight.
It sure is, wow.
I mean, this song's pretty obvious. It's, you know, suggesting that this, you know, people turn a blind eye.
Yeah.
To the problems outside of their own doorstep. I mean, that's true. So true.
Yeah. Just turn it all off. Live your life in your mind and do your thing and whatever's happening outside. Yeah. That's.
This song, of course, written around 91, 92. It makes me wonder, you know, I feel like it was maybe written around the time of the LA riot in 92. I mean, I can't confirm that.
Yep.
And I'm sure the band would say that it's a response to any number of events, but I mention it because fast forward 28 years later and the streets are still filled with the important voices of people demanding equality and vocalizing anger over the treatment of black people in our country.
To this very day.
Just like in 1992, 93, there are certain people who close their minds off to what's happening. You know, they don't take time to understand what is happening and make judgments. Oh, they're looting. And broad statements that just aren't true. You know,
they don't
see what's going on, the desperation, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's so easy to do that too when you have the ability to shut yourself inside and not have to deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
Just make those blanket statements and, yeah, like you said, the looting, if that's really the big takeaway that people are getting from something like that.
Yeah. Man,
yeah, get out of the house.
Amazing. And, it's, you know, I dive into a lot of these songs on this podcast and I listen to podcasts. The one thing that is always so frustrating is you take these songs from 92, 91, even the 80s.
Yes. And it's like,
these are still relevant songs today.
Right,
like,
now.
You look at some of the Minor Threat stuff and, you know, you're just like, this stuff is still relevant. It's been 30 years. It's been 35
years.
It's been 40 years. You know, Bad Religion. It's been 40 years since that first record came out.
It's like, exactly.
My God.
It's in many ways, unfortunately, as timely as ever.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So that's a Fletcher song. Yeah. And again, it's just a very syncopated one. Lock your doors, you know, just like a real.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Just urgent, you know?
Yeah.
Lock your doors.
City is burning.
And then
the drums.
But the drums again. Oh my God, Byron, this album. God, he must have weighed like 75 pounds with all the sweat he drew out there.
Yeah. Oh my God. All right. Let's look at Dying to Know. This one starts off with like some backwards chant.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
You think it's something corporate? Do you think it's telling us like drink more Pepsi? Yeah, they're playing it backwards. Yeah. Probably not, but you know.
The thing that gets me is that lead guitar. Is it me or did the band feature more lead guitar back in the day? Am
I think they did
that up.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I feel like later, you know, even more contemporary, it's, I don't want to say a little more structured, but like, I think the lead guitar fits in now a little bit more where you might like expect it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas, Dying to Know. And also, you know, when we were talking before about It's Up to Me, you know, pretty much just coming right in with a solo, like just kind of unconventional places to do that.
Let's put one here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Why not? Why? Because we can.
And it makes me wonder, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I wonder if any of this stuff was Randy, because Randy was a guitar player. And actually, he was supposed to join Pennywise as a second guitarist.
Really?
When all this was going
on. When everything
on,
was shaken out, yeah.
Face, and then it never ended up happening. But
no kidding.
There was a while where he was actually in consideration for playing guitar with Pennywise.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's quite the shuffle. Yeah.
Anyway, this is like a classic what does it all mean song. You know, like, why are we here? What's next?
Yep.
Jim sings, "It's burning a hole inside me. Answers to questions I seek. Burning a hole inside. Keeping the flame alive." He is desperately seeking answers, but doesn't know where to find them.
This is another one, you know, when we were talking earlier about, particularly with vices, this is the other one that I was thinking of that, I mean, it's an overt mention of it, but it kind of, again, thinking about suicide a few years later, what they were all going to experience, you know, but the lyric here, "Everywhere I try to hide, I'm threatened by your suicide. I'll test my faith till satisfied." You know, it's a really overt mention of it, but I just found it kind of chilling, you know, listening to it numerous times again in preparation to chat, but then reading through the lyrics, you know, again, just kind of that somber sort of feeling with how much desperation is in the song and then knowing, you know, fast forward 3 years. And
definitely. Wow. Yeah.
On that note, sorry. It's a great song.
You said faith. So yeah, there is kind of like this sense that I get from this song that, it, you know, it kind of makes me think of, like, you know, how people, they need answers. People want to know what's happening. I mean, people from thousands of years ago made up stories about the stars to help explain. They needed to have things explained. You know, people need things explained. And, you know, a lot of people turn to faith and God and, you know, it's unsettling to not know why and not be able to find answers. So I feel like a lot of times people turn to those things and, you know, I think faith is a wonderful thing. I just have trouble with people's blind faith in things, you know, or pushing their faith on others. But I totally understand this need to sort of understand your world, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
This is another Jason bass track on this one. And last thing I want to say about this one, I don't know if you have any more on this one, Taft, but.
No, not really. That was really it. It just stood out to me, you know, again, maybe too much overt. Maybe I'm looking at it too literally, but it just struck me immediately given what they were going to go through. And then now that I'm hearing that Jason played bass on it too. Even more so with that connection, kind of how their lives would change in 3 years, you know?
Not to beat a dead horse, but I want to go back to the Jim vocals on this one.
Yes.
Is it me, or I feel like he sounds like Mike Patton?
There is a little bit
a little
of Mike
bit
Patton
on this
there.
One from the Real Thing album, you know, like that.
Absolutely,
you know, really going to town on this one.
Again, you know, you never know with that. I mean, God, that album must have been like 91 or something. Maybe the studio engineer, you know, channeled a little bit of Mike Patton right in the ear. Yeah.
All right, let's get into Tester.
Oh, ain't that the truth? The more that you know, the less that you know. Wow.
You want to start giving up trying. You want to start curling up and dying.
Yep.
Now you got to try to make that test. You got to start giving it your best.
Wow.
This is like, you know, early 2000s, like instant messenger, away messenger stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Did you ever do that, man? Just like pull lyrics out of stuff
just
and put it up like,
up
I'm so clever. People are going to think I'm so cool.
Somebody clicks in, dude, where are you? Ding.
Yeah.
You're going to get through this yourself.
Yeah.
You're going to get through this through your own hell.
Yeah. Oh, man. Just a song about meeting your problems head on.
Yeah. Straight on. Yep. And I mean, and again, but like talk about like a classic Pennywise sort of statement about, you know, helping other people, but also, you know, picking yourself up by your bootstraps and trying to help yourself.
Yeah.
You know, just that positivity of like, you will get through it. You know, you're going to have to go through it. Other people might help you, but you're going to have to want to work through it. Same thing with vices, you know?
Yeah. It's got to be you.
Connection.
Yeah.
That connection we're making with people being willing to help, but you got to be willing to accept that help.
Yeah. It's a great song. The thing that always kind of intrigued me about this song is the pre-chorus is sung in this real minor key. Giving it almost the sense of doom, and it almost seems to create this like sense of falling. Maybe it's just me, but then the chorus kicks in and Jim switches to a major.
Yeah.
And suddenly it feels like uplifting. It's like
moving,
you know, it's like forward moving. And so it's kind of neat And it always kind of makes me feel like, again, not to bring up the roller coaster reference again, but, you know, going down and then swinging back up again. And I just kind of love that structure that they did for this one. And, you know, definitely a song that I'd turn up in the car. And
oh, for sure. Yeah.
Maybe push the gas pedal down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Such a good one.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Just a different way of doing that back and forth, you know, sometimes they do it with speed, you know, with tempo, going fast versus going slow. But yeah, that minor going into the major, the back and forth that they do with that, that's an interesting way of contrasting it.
Yeah, and I like it when bands really play with tempo. I mean, I think that's totally a great way to create moods and tensions in songs. So
yeah.
All right, the next song is Try to Conform. This is a great song.
Is this song tongue-in-cheek central, or?
I feel like it is, yeah. I don't know.
I
love
it, though.
I love the words. Pick yourself up by those bootstraps.
There it is, yeah, by the bootstraps, right there. Yeah. Some of the lyrics, though, like in one part, I can't wait to assimilate, just try to stop me. You know what I mean? Like, I read through some of that, and again, he delivers it so you miss it. It just goes right through. I can't wait to assimilate. And, you know, I see lyrics like that when, you know, it's a band that's preaching so much, as they should, as I love, you know, preaching so much about individuality and you know, just putting little bits in that. Like, I can't wait to assimilate. Yay. You know?
Yeah.
I love stuff like that in their songs.
It's just a fun and memorable song. I love the gang vocals. You know, you get the sweet guitar solo.
Yeah. The great solo, the gang vocals, that anthemic chanting through, you know, you just turn it up and rage with them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
It's a song about trying to conform to society's norms and realizing it's not worth it.
Hey!
Or maybe not even possible, you know?
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know, I'm not doing that.
Nope.
Pennywise have always drove home that individualism message, like, be yourself, live for today, it's up to you, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
In this song, they say, try, still you got nowhere. Try and stay in the line and live by the rules they say to follow. It's like, try, but you can't. You're not going to be able to do it.
Nope, exactly.
Going back to that solo, Fletcher's guitar stuff, I always love how he does, like, those solos just kind of soar over the top. I mean, he never does anything, like, you know, flashy or, you know, too crazy.
Yeah,
just melodic guitar work that just fits nicely over the top.
Totally. Yep. And good bending. Like, I feel like he could just take something like just up to another level just by like bending a note, holding it for a second, and like you said, nothing crazy. It just really effective.
His guitar looks like a ukulele in his hand.
So yeah, it's like, I know, and the thing's like oversized too. They built like a special Ibanez for him.
I love it.
I don't know. I mean, it just I've never surfed a day in my life, and just hearing him solo, like I just think SoCal punk. You know, like there's just something about, like, it just seems like he's just kind of letting go, you know? Mm-hmm. That was my Western Mass, letting go.
Letting go.
Yeah, letting go. But with a lot of these solos, and in every album, you know?
Yeah.
Just kind of ripping through these solos that aren't particularly intricate or anything, but they're so effective.
He's probably like, I'm not going to make him too hard because I got to play these things every night.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Solo's probably like a breath of fresh air for him. He gets back into a verse and he's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. The solo's probably like slow time for him. Catch a breath, you know?
I'm sure he's missed one or two.
Yeah.
The next song is Give and Get. I don't know. That's got to be Fletcher yelling go at the beginning, huh?
I have to imagine. Yeah. Now, he didn't write this one, did he?
I don't think so.
No? Okay.
I don't think so.
Some of the lyrics in it are, but one in particular. Yeah. It just cracks me up. Blame spoiled rotten brats for things that you don't have.
Yeah.
As it turns out, what they possess are things you don't want anyhow.
Do I feel sorry for you? Hell no. Get off your ass. Get with the program.
That's what had me wondering. I'm like, I don't know. Like that kind of sound, not that I know the guy, but that kind of sounds Fletcher-esque.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he had a hand in it, but
yeah.
I love it. I love it. You know, it's like, come on. get off your ass. Go to the program. You know, it's a song about getting out what you put in.
What you put in. Yeah, the last lines of the song. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Quit complaining. Do something.
Get out exactly what you give.
Take your blinders off.
Yeah. Common thematic element. And again, just moving along. What you give is what you get. Like, you could just picture belting along to any of these things out loud with them, you know? I love that.
Yeah. And it's another song where I feel like he's just barely getting those words out.
Hammering through. Exactly. That tempo and just getting every syllable in. It's crazy.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall for those like vocal recording sessions for this, you know, just watching him do that or like, because like when you're recording, you've got to nail every word, you know, it's like, it's crazy.
How many takes that has to have? I mean, just running out of air, spitting through some of that. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. And then again, live, like whole nother animal there. I mean, I feel like there's probably a certain amount of liberty you can take with a live crowd.
Yeah, live you can kind of mumble through it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Take a breath here or there where you need it. More about the show.
Or just yell, fuck yeah!
Yeah, everybody's, wow! Anyways.
Not in the studio, though.
Yeah, not in the studio. Now, let's try another take. Yeah, like, oh my God, we need oxygen.
Yeah. All right, the final track on my vinyl is Clear Your Head.
Now you may ask why such a blue sky? Of all the colors on a palette that you might try, your metal landscape, if one of you escape, you'll feel much better when you clear your head. And son, you'll soon see much better way to be.
Here's a song I feel like I relate to now.
Oh my God. Tell me about it.
Taking all the things, the bits of information, things people said, stuff you heard on TV, read in the news, you know, heard on some silly podcast, and just like flushing it out of your brain, you know, like clearing it out.
Seriously.
Just like feeling better about not having all that stuff just like circulating inside.
Just noise. The signal to noise ratio is like so low with everything right now, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if it's age. I don't know if it's, insert cliche here about social media, news, was probably everything, you know?
Yeah.
But
it's just bombardment.
It's crazy. I'm just fine. Going to bed, my mind is just always racing, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing that kills me, though, is anytime I hear it, and of course, I've been listening to it a lot over the past few days, there's no solution. He's like, you got to get it out of your head. I'm like, come on, Jim, give me something. Give me something from 30 years ago. What can I do? How can I get, how can I clear my mind? How can I rein out my crowded brain?
What's the answer here?
I know. Yeah, and I guess he'd be an incredibly wealthy self-help guru if he could give that information. But but ain't that the truth, especially closing out an album. That's just,
Well, I think he's got it. He says, ream out your crowded brain.
Exactly. I don't know how to ream it out, though. You know, and I know vices. Nope, not going to go that route, you know? I just got to figure it out. But that is a great lyric, though, isn't it? Ream out your crowded brain. You'll feel much better when you clear your head. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wish I could take his advice. I mean, I try to clear my mind of what's happening in the world, you know, the pandemic, the bizarre political situation in this country, the terrible behavior of adults, worrying about my boys, my job, hoping my car won't die tomorrow. You know, it's like wondering when, you know, all this stuff is going to happen. Will I be safe if I go to like shows now?
I know.
It's just too much. You know, you have to stop and just like, I don't know, clear it out somehow. Meditate, you know, bongo drums.
Find a way to do it. Who knows? Yeah. Get help to do it if you need it. Yep. But it's just another typical, like straightforward, positive penny wisdom. Of course, I stole that from their website, but bits of wisdom from Pennywise. Yeah.
If you turn it up towards the beginning, you can hear someone say, hit it, Four Eyes.
And no way. Can you really?
Like, I'm always wondering, like, does Byron wear glasses? Like, are they talking to him?
Or
like,
no idea.
Who's Four Eyes?
I've heard this a zillion times. I've never, ever heard that.
Yeah.
I've had it a pretty good length or pretty good volume as well. Yeah.
Hit it, Four Eyes.
I mean, I know Fletcher wears glasses sometimes. I don't think anybody would dare call him Four Eyes, though. Good Lord.
Yeah, and you don't really say hit it when you're playing guitar.
Yeah, when you're playing guitar, yeah. Yeah.
So, mystery. Big mystery.
Never heard that.
The stuff that only we care about. And then the song ends with a mash of like TV and radio voices.
Yes.
You know, creating that clutter, that noise sensation, which is just perfect for the end of the song.
Perfect.
It's all about that. I mean, we literally live in a world where you're watching the news and you've got a person giving you news, and at the bottom, it's more news scrolling by. And in the corner, there's information, there's stats or numbers. And then it's like, oh my God.
Can't get enough. And I can change the channel and get it on more channels. It's great.
Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy.
Online, my links have links. It's just crazy.
I know. My pop-ups have pop-ups and links have links. And Yeah, try to filter it out. There's like, I don't know. I feel like I unsubscribe from stuff all day long. You know, no more, no more.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I can't get away from it.
Just clearing the claptrap, man. Just get it out. Great song. Great way to finish the album. Awesome. I love this whole record. I actually want to go through one more song, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
CD versions come with a song called Slow Down. Bonus song after about 10 minutes of silence.
Yeah.
This is a great song, and I'm not sure why they stuck it on as a bonus track. I feel like this song belongs on the album, you know, it belongs on the album proper.
And it was 10 minutes after, so like a hidden track basically on the CD, right?
Yeah. And it's a total nod to Black Flag's No More at the beginning, like those bass drum and guitar stabs, you know.
I completely forgot about this being at the end of it. I rather guiltily, Pennywise would probably hate this, listened over the past few days on digital, traveling to and from work. Slow Down wasn't on there.
Yeah.
So I completely forgot about that.
You don't get this one unless you've got CDs.
I know. Yep. Got too much fun ahead of me. Too much fun ahead of me.
Yeah, it's just fast. I love it. Breakneck speed, man. Just
boom. Absolutely. Oh, I feel bad. I'm leaving you hanging on this one.
I kind of threw it at you, man. I didn't give you any warning.
Right. Of course, again, the Pennywise rabbit hole I'm going to go down after this, which is great because I already did before.
The song has a big sing-along chorus where all these cheering people sing it out. It's you know, it's fun. I think it's a really fun song. Maybe it was too lighthearted for the album. Maybe it was too different to include. Yep. Maybe it just didn't fit. It sounds like a party song.
It really does. And I mean, especially again, you know, not having done my homework with this, apologies, but looking, you know, looking at the second verse, reality doesn't, it doesn't refer to me. The real world's no big deal, man. You know, it's, you know, maybe it was, maybe it just kind of stuck out, but it was still a good recordable thing to toss at the end of an album.
Responsibility is a foreign word to me.
Yep.
And repeats the I got too much fun ahead of me part. Yeah, so I don't know. It's a little lighthearted. It's a little fun.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, a re-recorded version of the song appears on the band's 2014 collection of re-recorded oldies the band issued once Jim returned to the band the second time
after.
And this version cuts out all the cheering and crowd noise from the original. It's just straightforward. There's no yelling. There's no cheering.
And that was the 2014 was a re-recording. That wasn't like a demo recording that they did prior. No,
they redid it.
Okay.
Tried to make it maybe a little more serious without all that partying going on in the background.
Right.
I don't know. I kind of like the party. I like the party that's happening. Kind of feel like I want to go to that party.
Yeah, exactly. This is from the earlier days of Pennywise with the early, early days when rehearsals were beer. Yeah.
All right. So I want to take a quick look at the artwork for this record. I love this artwork. This is a Fred Hidalgo. He did this one. He had worked with the band on their previous record and would go on to handle art direction for Bad Religion, The Offspring, NOFX, 10-Foot Pole. Seems like, you know, maybe he had a connection at Epitaph. He was their guy for a while, you know, kind of the go-to. It shows a repeating pattern of a man marching forward, draped in chains.
Yep.
They're in black and white on like a blue background. Mm-hmm. And you can see an enlarged version of the picture inversed in the background. It's pretty cool. I always liked it.
It is. It's neat. Yeah.
Flipping the record over, it's got the songs on the back, that typewriter font you were talking about.
Yeah.
Pennywise logo in the corner.
How much more punk can you get?
So get this. Early pressings of the vinyl, I mentioned this at the start, have a few mistakes on them. The first U.S. pressing had the title track misspelled on the back sleeve as Uncone Road.
Uncone Road.
Yeah. Of course, later versions would go on to fix that mistake. The labels list track A2 as Homesickness.
Okay. Well, that's a little less egregious, I guess. Yeah. You know,
And B2 as Savior.
Yeah.
I don't know where Savior comes from.
Savior. No idea.
So, you know, possibly thrown together quickly. No one noticed. No one was paying attention. It makes kind of like a cool collectible for us vinyl nerds, you know.
Now I'm going to have to get out of my head. Things you contemplate at the Uncone Road.
Yeah, the
Yeah,
Uncombed
just give
Road.
those different lyrics there. And then Homesickness. Yeah. Okay.
Pretty
Interesting. That
funny.
was only in the first pressings, huh?
Yeah, first pressings went
Wow.
out.
Okay.
I guess
Never
pretty good.
CD, just the first pressing vinyl. Yeah. Do you happen to have one of those in front of you? Do you have a first press?
I do not have a
Oh
first
man, I was gonna
pressing.
say, sheesh.
Unfortunately, I do not.
Wow.
I have
I know
friends who
you're
do,
a
and they
man of
tease me that I
acquiring.
don't have a first pressing.
Wow. Yeah, I know you can you have a magical way of acquiring awesome vinyls.
I
Yeah.
threaten people.
Yeah.
Give me that
What a great album, though.
Yeah.
I've been to California once or twice in my life and never there, but I don't know. I just the thing just seems like the quintessential SoCal skate punk album, you know?
Oh, hell yeah.
Just
This is
ripping
great.
all the way through, and the positive, messages throughout it. And yeah, just classic punk.
Definitely.
Classic Pennywise, yeah.
Yeah, throwing all these songs on all the skate and snowboarding videos that were coming out around the
Exactly. Video
time. Yeah.
games and no doubt a couple of them made video games. Yeah.
In closing, Pennywise Unknown Road is just a burst of high energy punk songs that encourage individualism and encourage us to think about the world beyond our doorstep. Recorded under uncertain circumstances, the band, like many, managed to pull together a great album in these unfavorable circumstances. With Jim's return and Jason's temporary exit, the band must have felt uncertain about the future, a future that would see the explosion of punk in the mid-90s. Securing a deal that would get a lot of Pennywise music into skate and surf videos, the band was well on their way to staking their claim on being one of the important underground punk bands of the era. I went backwards to find this album and just loved its intense energy and messages. It's hard not to think of summer days hanging around with friends when I was younger. Listening to this album, it definitely brings me back to those times.
Heck yeah. I couldn't possibly agree more. Again, stumbling into this one backwards, one Pennywise album to another, and it was just everyone was a treasure trove, you know?
Yeah.
Almost to the point with some of the albums after I had devoured all of them, where I almost wish I could like unlisten to them and listen to them for the first time again. Like I just love every one of their albums and waited voraciously for every album after that to come out for Straight Ahead and Land of the Free and so on and so forth all the way through. I could talk about all of them with you. I love it.
I think we might. I think we might end up doing that.
That's sounds good. A whole series of me bumbling through. I like the history lessons, man. I had no idea some of the stuff with this, like that crazy. That reads like a soap opera. Like that's
Yeah,
nuts with
isn't
all
that
the things
nuts?
moving around for their second album.
I know.
Second
Just trying to
album
get
was
this thing
wild.
recorded, you know?
And the story of why that would have happened too, just with the concerts in LA. That's just, I've listened to this a million times. I've never known that. I'll listen
Yeah.
to it entirely different next time.
Yeah, and it adds,
It's
adds
wild.
context to the record. It makes you kind of
Yeah.
appreciate things a little bit more because you realize that, this band went through a lot to get this
Totally.
record out, and the stuff they were writing kind of reflects where they were in their life. And I always enjoy knowing those things. I mean, some people are like, "Do you really want to know how the sausage is made?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I kind of do.
Kind of do. Yeah. I
It
find it really
helps me
fascinating.
really,
Yeah.
get into a record."
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, I would like to thank you so much for hanging out with me tonight and talking about this. This was a lot of fun.
This is great, Dion. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Make sure you go back and check out episode 26, where Chris and I dive into Pennywise's Full Circle album. Bassist Randy Bradbury joins us at the beginning to answer some questions. Definitely, definitely check it out. I would like to thank Chris DeMakes from Less Than Jake for the theme music. I'd like to thank Craig for all the things he does behind the scenes, words of encouragement, graphic stuff. Sometimes I just bounce bad ideas off of him and he says, "No, don't go there." And I say, "Okay, thank you. That's all I needed, you know?"
He says it in the best way, too.
Yeah, oh yeah. Lets
Yep.
me down real easy.
Absolutely.
I would also like to thank all of you listeners. Yes, you. Thank you so much. We appreciate you checking out Talking Records, spending time listening to us break down these records, and of course, for checking in with us on social media. We're music lovers and collectors, and we love nothing more than to chat music. So hit us up. Let us know if it's up to you or if it's up to me.
That was a perfect. I can. All I'm going to do is bubble through it like I am now. That was perfect. I'm
All
not a
right.
closer.
All right, man.
Thanks so
Perfect.
much, Dion.
All right, take care.